Socrates once said, "For anything that men can tell, death may be the greatest good that can happen to them, but they fear it as if they know quite well that it was the greatest of evils. And what is this but that shameful ignorance of thinking that we know what we do not know?" Basically, what he's saying is that everybody thinks they know that death is evil, is a bad thing, but for all we know, it's good. How do we know? How can people be so arrogant and think that they know things that they really don't know? Do you get that? Okay. So this is the introduction to a book called Chasing Daylight by Eugene O'Kelly, the head of one of the big accounting firms, who was diagnosed with a terminal illness. And he wrote this book talking about how, in fact, this experience actually enhanced his life, and he was able to really use it to make the most of the rest of his life. And the first two lines of his book read, "I was blessed. I was told I had 3 months to live." And I thought this quote from Socrates in this book was a good segue into the topic of how we deal with evil in general, and specifically in Gullis Mitzrayim, because this week's Parsha is Parsha Shmos, the first Parsha of Sefer Shmos, Sefer Gullis of Ula. And a big question regarding Shmos is, why were we in Gullis Mitzrayim in the first place? And subsequent to that, I wanted to just talk about one particular way how we got out of Gullis Mitzrayim and apply the ideas of how we got in and how we got out to our current Gullis today and evils that happen the rest of Jewish history. To begin, the first thing, and basically I'm going to provide and sort of present four different approaches, Jewish approaches, to how to deal with the question of evil. It's a classic question, theodicy it's called in philosophy, how it is possible that there could be evil in the world and yet there's a good God that we believe in at the same time. How could he allow evil or cause evil to exist? So the first thing that we think of when we think of the Gullis Mitzrayim is Bris Ben HaBasarim, because Hashem promised it, right? In Lech Lecha, source 1, Perek Tevav, Pasuk Yud Gimel, says, "Ve'yomer Avram, Yadoet La'Avram, Yadoet Heida, Ki Ger Yezarachav Eretz Lo Lahem, V'Avadum, V'inu Otam, Arba Meot Shana, V'Gamer Hagoya, Asher Yavodu, Dan Anochi, V'Acharechein, Yitzu Beruchush Gadol." So Hashem promises Avram, he says, you should know, your children are going to be strangers in a strange land that's not theirs, they're going to be servants, they're going to suffer for 400 years, and the nation that puts them into servitude, that they're going to serve, I'm going to judge them. And then your children, the Jewish people, are going to go out with a lot of possessions. So Hashem here, take note, Hashem doesn't explain exactly what is going to happen, the details, and he doesn't explain why it's going to happen, but he just says it is going to happen, which tells us one thing. It tells us that going down to Mitzrayim was preordained. It was some kind of chok. Hashem said it's going to happen, and it happened. Hashem didn't explain why. It's just a chok. And Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, the chief rabbi of Israel, has a piece on this week's Parsha where he describes how this approach is a more general approach that we can use towards evil and not just towards why the Jewish people went down to Mitzrayim. This idea that Hashem made it happen. Hashem is the one who declares that evil should happen, but we just don't understand it. And he uses a different part, he uses a specific part of the Parsha to talk about it. In Perek Al Pasuk Vav, it says, "Vayomer Anochi Elokei Avicha, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, V'yaster Moshe Panav Ki Yarei Mehabit El HaElokim." So this is at the burning bush when Moshe comes over and Hashem introduces himself. He says, "I'm the God of your forefathers." And Moshe Rabbeinu, he hides his face because he's afraid of looking at Hashem at Elohim. And Rabbi Sacks quotes his rabbi, Rabbi Nachum Rabinovich, in explaining a particular Gemara related to this. The Gemara is in Brachos, Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. It says, "Pligi de Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar of Yonatan, Amar of Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar of Yonatan, Vischar Shalosh, Zachal Shalosh, Vischar Vayaster Moshe Panav, Zachale klaster panim. Vischar ki yarei. Zachale v'yiru migashrei lav. Vischar mehabit. Zachale v'tmunat Hashem yabit." So each of the phrases at the end of the pasuk is praiseworthy to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a good thing he did. And in the zechus of that, he received reward later on in the midbar when he encountered Hashem. And he in turn reflected the godliness of Hashem that here he was humble before. So when it says Vayaster Moshe Panav, he hid his face, in the schos of that, Mida Keneged Mida, his own face shone, after his encounter with Hashem. In the schos of Ki Yarei, that he feared Hashem, he was in such a state that other people feared him after he encountered Hashem by your umigeshdei love. Chas v'shalom, he himself wasn't a god. Rabbi Sachs makes a point pointing out, but he just reflected that experience. And the third one is the one that requires some explanation. May habit from looking at Hashem. He was afraid of looking at Hashem. What's the zechus, the schar that he had because he did not look at Hashem? Tmuna Hashem yabit, that later on he was able to see Hashem's image. So the question that Rabbi Sachs and Rabbi Rabinovich pose is, why is the third one here? It doesn't seem to connect to me. It doesn't even seem to make sense. If Moshe was right in not looking at Hashem, why should his reward be that he is able to look at Hashem? Shouldn't that not be appropriate? And if it's a reward to look at Hashem, it's good that he did that, then why is it praiseworthy that he did not look at Hashem in the Pasuk in Shmos? So what's going on? So Rabinovich gives a very interesting answer, which relates to our topic. He says that he points out that in our Pasuk in Shmos, which name of Hashem is it? Elohim, the name of Din. That's the name of Hashem that Moshe was afraid of looking at. The name of Hashem used in Devarim, Sefer Devarim, later in the Gemara quotes, is Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei. And to that name of Hashem, that aspect of Hashem, Rachamim, which that name indicates, that Moshe Rabbeinu was zocha to look at. In other words, the Din aspects of Hashem, Moshe did not want to look at. He did not want to understand. There was evil happening in Egypt. Moshe did not look to figure out why it was happening. That was inappropriate. What was Moshe more interested in? The Rachamim. In the reward, he was in Mitzrayim. He was the one who stood up for the Jew that the Mitzri was hitting. He wanted justice to happen. He asked Hashem later, Lama hariot l'am hazeh, why did you do this evil to this nation? They should be in Mitzrayim. He challenged the evils that were happening in the fight of justice, in the name of justice. And so, because he was able to relate to Hashem's name of Rachamim, he did not look after why Hashem did evil. That's why he was able to see Tmunat Hashem, the image of Hashem in the sense of Rachamim. If a person just accepts that Hashem does wrong and doesn't try to understand it, then they'll be able to properly be a merciful person, just like Hashem is merciful. Because what happens if a person does try to understand evil that happens? It's possible that they might come to understand too much, and then they'll justify it. They'll say, oh, I know why this evil has to happen, because such and such. So unfortunately, that's just the way it has to be, because it has to happen, and they won't try to fight for justice. And Rabbi Sachs points out that we are supposed to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. We're supposed to fight for justice like our leader. We're not supposed to try to understand why evils happen. We're just supposed to try to eradicate them. So this is the first approach to why we were in Galus Mitzrayim, as per First Pin Habasarim, no explanation. Why evil things happen, we're not really supposed to understand why they happen, and we're just supposed to try to fight evil. And it might be a little hard to understand how it's possible that Hashem could have some reason behind why evil things could happen. It looks so evil to us. How is it possible that there could be any good that comes of it, even if we don't understand it? Rabbi Pesach Kron gives a poignant mashal to explain this. He says, once there was a tailor, a Jewish tailor. He was the best tailor, the most expert tailor that there was. He made perfect suits, perfect clothing for everyone, stylish, good, you know, well, quality of craftsmanship. Everyone used to go to this Jewish tailor. And one day, there's a non-Jewish, anti-Semitic nobleman who wanted the best suit. He wanted to have an excellent, excellent suit for himself. He asked around, where do I go to get the best suit? I want only the top, top tailor. So everybody told him, there's this Jew. Go to this Jew, this tailor. He's the most expert tailor there is. So he wasn't so happy about going to a Jew who's an anti-Semite, but he wanted his good suit, so he went anyway. He brings him a very large piece of material. He says, here, Jew, Mr. Taylor, please make me a suit out of this material. Jew says, fine. He takes the material, he makes the suit, he gives it back to the man, who's very happy, and the nobleman wears his suit home proudly and shows his wife, look, this tailor made me this beautiful suit. Look at what the Jewish tailor made me. Now, this anti-Semitic nobleman's wife was also an anti-Semite. She doesn't want to go praising a Jew, praising the Jewish tailor about the suit that he made. How could she say something good about a Jew? So she looks at the suit, she looks at her husband, she says, are you kidding me? This is not a good suit. You know what this Jew did? Look at your suit, it's so small. Remember you gave him such a large piece of material, and your suit is so small. You know what he did? He took your material, he cut off some pieces, kept them for himself to sell for more money, and he made you the suit out of the rest. He's a thief. He stole some of your material. The nobleman looks at his suit for a minute, he thinks. He says, you know what, you're right. There was more material that I gave him. He storms back to the Jew. He says, excuse me, you're a thief? I gave you a lot of material and all you gave me is this small suit. You stole my material. The Jew starts defending himself. Oh, no, no, I promise. I used all the material for your suit. Every single bit is in your suit. The nobleman berates him. He keeps yelling at him. No, you're a thief. You didn't make it all for the suit. You kept some material. You're a thief. You're a thief. He keeps yelling at him and yelling at him. The Jew defends himself until finally he says, I'll show you. Give me your suit. Change out of your suit and I'll show you. So the nobleman changed out of his suit. He hands him the suit. And the Jew grabs it. And as soon as he knows it, he starts cutting up every single seam that he made. He tears it from thread to thread, cuts out every hem, every pocket. And the nobleman is staring at him. He says, are you kidding? Not only are you a thief, but you're insane. Why are you destroying my suit? You just made this suit and you're cutting it all up. What is wrong with you? The Jew says, I'll show you. And little by little, as he undoes every single seam, he lays out all the material of the suit on the table. And now, with every seam undone, it stretches out. Every bit of the material looks much larger than when it was a suit. He says, look, sir, you see? I promise you, this is all your material. I did use all your material for the suit. And Rabbi Kron says that this mashal explains a particular piyut, Eila Eskara, that talks about the Saharuge Malchus that we say on Yom Kippur. It explains Arzeh Halvan and Eila Eskara. We say different versions of it on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur about the Saharuge Malchus, where one thing that happens in that piyut is that the 10 Talmidei Chachamim, great Talmidei Chachamim, were being killed in these terrible ways. And up in Shemayim, the Malachim come to Hashem, and they say, Hashem, Hashem, Zu Torah v'Zu Schora, Hashem, this is what you do to your Talmidei Chachamim, how can you do this to them? And essentially, you're asking the question of evil, how can you allow these evils to happen, or cause these evils to happen? And Hashem, you know what Hashem says to them? He says, quiet. He says, quiet, or else I'm going to have to return the whole world to Tohu. So what is this comment of Hashem in this piyut? This mashal explains it, because Hashem is saying, you can't understand, you can't possibly understand my craftsmanship, how I made the suit, how I made the world, why there has to be evil, why it looks like I cut off some of the pieces of material. You can't possibly understand it. The only way you could understand it is if I rip apart the world to shreds, to tohu, and you see the inner workings of the world. But with the world structure as it is, you just can't understand. That's just the way it has to be. And that's what it means that it was a chok. Hashem just says, bris bin habisarim, this is how it has to be in Mitzrayim, this is what evil has to be, and we just can't understand. And in a way, as Rabbi Sachs says, in a way, maybe it's better if we don't really understand why evil things happen, because then we justify them. Or maybe, some people could say, maybe we wouldn't even justify them. We wouldn't understand things the way Hashem understands things, because we can't. So if Hashem tried to tell us why something evil had to happen, we would say Hashem's not justified, and we would blame him and say, really, that's not a good reason. So ultimately, this approach number one for Galus Mitzrayim and evil is, Hashem says, Hashem decrees it, and we just have to accept it. It's His will. We don't understand. Approach number two. Approach number two to evil is the complete opposite. Not that Hashem is the one causing it, but that it's because of people. And the Ramban in Shmos Bet, Pasuk Kaf Hei, talks about this a little bit. Because the Chumash says, Vayar Elokim et Bnei Yisrael, that Hashem, after the Jewish people are in Galus and in Mitzrayim, they're working hard, they're calling out to Hashem, Hashem suddenly sees what's going on to them. First he quotes the Ibn Ezra, then third line he quotes Rashi. Rashi Pirish, Vayeda Elokim, Natan Alehem Lev, Veloha Lime Nomehem. What does it mean, Hashem saw? Of course Hashem saw. Hashem always sees and knows everything that's happening. So what does it mean that Hashem saw and knew what was happening? It means He paid attention to them. Natan Alehem Lev. He didn't hide His eyes anymore. V'nachonu al derech hapshat, ki b'tchila So now Hashem stopped hiding His face. Now He paid attention and He looked at what was going on. But before, they were left to be the prey of the Mitzrim. Now He heard their tefillos and He saw them, and He knew and paid attention to their pain and everything that they needed. And so basically what the Ramban is saying is Hashem isn't the one who actually perpetrated the evil. The last approach said it was a chok that we don't understand, but the other aspect of it, there are two main points in the last approach, that it was a chok we don't understand, but that the active person who's causing it to happen is Hashem person, and the active being is Hashem. This approach says no, Hashem lets people do what they want. Sometimes Hashem hides His eyes, He has Hester upon Him, and lets people act in the world. And so that's what was happening in Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim are the ones who are perpetrating the evil. They're the ones at fault. And the Maharal It's interesting, by the way, the Ramban does acknowledge Bris Bin Habasarim. If you look in the next couple lines, when it says that why the Geula happened, Haricha Katziv Lazkir Tano Rabot the Geula Tam, it says Vayishma Alakim Anakatam Yiskor Alakim Abrito. Hashem, listen, remember his Bris. There, he does point admit that there was a Bris Bin Habasarim, but the active entity who caused the evil are the Mitzrim. And the Moral reflects this as well in Gvoras Hashem, Source 5. The Medrash comments on a pasuk in Devarim, which calls the experience in Mitzrayim a korah barzel, a fiery iron furnace, and the Medrash explains this wording in Devarim by saying that this is a mashal for the experience in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was like an iron furnace, and just as the goldsmith has to reach his hand in to yank out the gold from the fiery furnace, so too Hashem had to reach in and yank us out of Mitzrayim. Shem Mitzrayim hayu machzikin v'govrin aleihim b'chazkat hayad shalahem shelo yitzias shel mirshutam. These three lines especially emphasize and highlight that the Mitzrayim are the ones who were ruling over us, who were doing all these evils. The Mitzrayim were holding us strong and wouldn't let us out of their grasp, out of their rishus. He's saying Rishon because he had a second part of his piece, but that's not relevant to our shir. So here he explains the relationship between the Hester Panim and the Mitzrim perpetrating the evil. He says, because we were like gold in the fiery furnace, and just as the fire in the furnace acts on the gold, but it also serves as a boundary between goldsmith and the gold, so too Mitzrayim were the ones who were hard on us. They were harsh and, you know, making us work for them harshly in Mitzrayim, and they also distanced us from Hashem. Hashem had to take a step back away from us to have Hester Panim, to allow Mitzrayim to do this. So if we blame Hashem for these evils, we shouldn't really, because really Hashem took a step back because he had to allow for Bechira Chavshis, and it was really the Mitzrayim who did this. And this is a very foundational idea in Judaism, because Bechira Chavshis is foundational in order for us to have Schar Va'onesh, and for us to do mitzvot, there has to be Schar Va'onesh. For the world to be the most perfect world there could be, we have to be able to feel that sense of accomplishment. We can't have everything done for us if Hashem just did things for us one way or the other. Human beings have to be able to choose to do what's right or what's wrong and to accomplish things in this world. And unfortunately, that allowance of Bechira Chavshis also allows for evil to exist. But Hashem felt, according to this approach number two, that that was an important enough reason. Bechira was important enough to allow for evil even. Now, the first two approaches sound contradictory to one another. Which is it? Hashem caused the evil to happen, or people caused the evil to happen? And this is a question that I've thought about a lot, actually, the past couple of years, where my family has gone to my grandparents for the Pesach Seder, but we've switched off the last couple of years, different sides of the family that have been married, but whenever we go to my family, we go to my grandparents, and my grandfather, Al-Vishalmi, passed away in the last year now. He was a Holocaust survivor, and he always grappled with these questions of evil and how could God allow what happened in the Holocaust. It was a very hard issue for him in belief. And when I would sit at his Pesach Seder, I would wonder, because here we are, sitting at our Seder, celebrating all the mitzvot and telling the story and singing Hallel to Hashem about how he freed us from Mitzrayim, the Geula, he did Nisim for us, wonderful. Thank you, Hashem. And yet, hold on a second. Who's the one who brought us into Mitzrayim in the first place? How can we sit here thanking and praising Hashem to no end for freeing us if he's the one who put us there in the first place? And it troubled me in a way. So this second response is one answer to that. This second response says, no, Hashem, it's not Hashem's fault. Hashem didn't really do these evils to us. It was the Mitzrayim. And so we are justified. It is normal to thank Hashem so much even though we were in the evil, because the Mitzrayim were the ones who did the evils to us in the first place, and Hashem is the one who freed us. And even according to the first approach, it's still a little bit understandable to answer that question, because it says even if Hashem did it, it's a humble approach of just saying we really don't understand. We just have to appreciate the good he did for us and have faith that he did the evil for whatever reason that was right, even if we don't understand why. A little bit continuation of explaining how these two approaches can reconcile, though, because once again, which is it though? Hashem did evil or humans did evil? So first, the continuation of the Maral at the top of the second column says as follows. Second to last word on the top line. Hazahav, again with this mashal, Hazahav shu b'toch hakor, chasheha hutza'a mitoch hakor, mifnei sha'esh shu b'toch hakor, mitzarif u'mizakei hazahav, monea hazahavi milito hazahav. Va'esh ha'mavdil bin hazahavi bin hazahav shabakor, bin chibor v'tzirif l'zahavi hazeh el hazahav. Kach Yisrael, kashayu tachat rishu mitzrayim, mitzrim po'olim bahem, Yisrael tachat rishutam shal mitzrayim, ad shabishvil zeh, lo haya hitzarfut Yisrael el kadosh baruch hu, ki ayu haim, tachat rishu mitzrayim. So again, he talks about this relationship and this separation between us and Hashem, but why? Because the fire was busy purifying the gold. So that tells us that this hints to the first explanation, that it was Hashem who did it, because the Maral doesn't say it explicitly, but implicit in his mashal is that the goldsmith is the one who put the gold in the furnace in the first place. Granted, the Maral is emphasizing and focusing on the Mitzrim, the Esh, as the one that's directly acting on the gold. And he also hints to our third explanation in saying that it was to purify the gold. We'll say the third explanation in a minute, the third perspective on evil in a minute. But obviously someone put the gold there, and it was the goldsmith. So that's the first explanation, that it was Hashem's doing. But the way the Maral describes it is, once the goldsmith put the gold in, then it's left to the whims of the fire. Then it's the fire that directly acts on it. So it's both. Hashem put us in Mitzrayim in general first, and then once we were there, the Mitzrayim are the ones who perpetrated the specific evils, and that's like the fire. So that's one way, way number one, to reconcile the first two perspectives. Way number two to reconcile the first two perspectives on evil and on Gaul's Mitzrayim is explained by the Ramban. If you look halfway down, a little more than halfway down, source 6, there's a bracket, V'chein haya b'mitzrayim, shosifu lahara, ki shlichu b'neim le'or, v'yemaru l'chayim, v'chashvu l'mchod et shemam, v'zet ta'am dan anochi, shavi otam b'mishpat, imasu k'nigzar aleihem, o sifu lahara lehem, v'zeo mashamar yitro, ki b'davar, asher zadu aleihem, ki hazadon hu shehivi aleihem, ha'onesh agadol, she'abdam min ha'olam. So he brings him Tzukim about this, and the Ramban says, he brings up a question. The Ramban here is actually a parish on Brish Bein Abisarim, in Source 1, and he asks a question. Hashem says in Brish Bein Abisarim, V'agam eragoy asher yavodu dan anochi. I'm going to judge the nation that is harsh to you this way, that does evil to you. And Ramban says, wait a second, if Hashem is declaring it, then how can he punish the nation that does it? It's Hashem's tzivoy that someone should do this evil. So how can you punish the ones who do it? It's almost as if they're doing a mitzvah. So Ramban says no. The reason they're punishable is because the Mitzrim did more than they should have. They weren't supposed to throw the babies into the river. They were supposed to, whatever, do some other kind of servitude to the Jewish people. But the evils they did, the torturing they did to the Jewish people, that was michutz l'gavul. That was too much. And so the Ramban says, granted, Hashem did declare that it should happen, but the Mitzrim are also at fault because they persecuted us more than they should have. And the third answer of how we can reconcile the first and the second perspectives on evil is the Ramban in the same piece, quoting the Rambam. He says, "V'harav natan tam b'sefer amad." He also gave an explanation. Lafi shelo gazar al isha dua mechol otam amarim liYisrael elu lo ratza kol echad mehem arishut biyado. Lafi shelo nigzar al isha dua. He says, really, the Brish Bein Abisarim, yes, Hashem did say that this was supposed to happen, but Hashem didn't say who was supposed to make it happen. He didn't say, Mitzrayim, you have to be the ones to persecute the Jewish people, and they didn't have to do it. Why didn't Mitzrayim stand up and say, okay, I'll do it, I'll persecute the Jews? No, they shouldn't have done that. They shouldn't have volunteered for such a terrible thing, and so they are held at fault as well. So once again, according to the Rambam, in a little bit of a different way, Hashem is the one who perpetrates the evil in a way, who says there's a decree, you have to go down to Mitzrayim. But ultimately, the human beings who choose to fulfill whatever Hashem generally decrees are the ones who are also held at fault. So that could go for Mitzrayim, and you could also explain that for other evils. Maybe Hashem is the one who, you know, writes the Gzar Din, but people enact it and people decide how much to do. Okay. Those are the first two approaches once again. And as I mentioned, the Maral hints to the third approach, and actually the Ramban in source number 4 also hints to the third approach to evil, because if you look after the bracket in source number 4, I don't know if you have a bracket there, a little further down, he says, second to last line in that Ramban source 4, he says, ki afal pi shenishlam hazman shenigzar lehem lo hayu re'uyim lehigael. Even though the time for the Galus Mitzrayim had passed, the time that was in the Gezar Din of Hashem had passed, the Jewish people were still not worthy to be redeemed. And it says afterwards that they were just redeemed because they davened, which we'll get to at the end of the shiur. So what does this mean, that they weren't worthy to be redeemed? That seems to say that in order to be redeemed, they had to deserve it. It wasn't just a Gezar Din, you'll be in Galus, you'll be redeemed. No, you have to actually deserve it. Which means that maybe the fact that they were in Galus in the first place means that there was something undeserving about them. And again, in the Maharal, he also hints at this possibly. He says that the fire is purifying the gold. And in the Nimshal, that means the Mitzrim were purifying the Jews in a way. There was something impure about us, something, some flaw. There was a problem about us. And maybe, in a way, even though this is an explanation that's not usually used for Mitzrayim, it's used about other evils, but maybe in Mitzrayim, the Galus and the suffering was actually a punishment for some flaw that we had. And we see that again in Source 7, Rashi says, where a different part of the Parsha, where Moshe Rabbeinu is with the Mitzri, and the Mitzri is hitting the Jew, and he kills the Mitzri, so then later he's by the two Jews who are fighting, and one Jew says to him, he starts to intervene, one Jew says, you know, what are you going to kill me like you killed the Mitzri? So Moshe says, Achenu da'adavar, oh no, now it's known that I killed the Mitzri, and that's the pshat. That's what Rashi says, kimashmo, it's possible to interpret it that way. But Rashi also quotes the Midrash. Midrash, what does it mean, Achenu da'adavar? No da, ki ha'davar she'ayiti tame'alav, ma'achat u Yisrael mikol shivim umot li'o nirdim ba'avodat parach, aval ro'ani shehim ro'yim l'kach. Originally, Moshe Rabbeinu says, originally I was wondering, what sin did the Jewish people do where they deserved to be subservient to the Mitzrim in this terrible Avodat Parach? What did they do wrong more than any other nation? But now that he sees these Jews fighting, he says, oh, Achenu da'adavar, now I know. Now I know that they were deserving of being in Galus. It's their fault, in his essence, he's saying. He's saying the Jewish people are fighting with each other. This flaw, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, is enough that they should deserve to be in Galus and suffer so much in Mitzrayim. It's their fault. And this is a classic approach to evil in general. Also, in a lot of Jewish tradition, we have nevuahs about, you know, criticizing how the Jewish people made mistakes, ben zama makom, ben zama chavero, and how it caused the churban. And in the second paragraph of Shema, we see this kind of scharva onesh, with a direct correlation between our actions and bad things that happen to us. And that's a very traditional approach. It's not very politically correct among many in our circles, especially nowadays, to say that evil is a punishment. Especially don't go over telling your friend that, God forbid, if something bad's happening to them, oh, you know, it's because you did this and this, unless you know your friend very well, but that's not good for most people to don't like to hear that. But, you know, this is definitely an approach that it's to purify us. And again, punishment doesn't mean Hashem hates me, you know, he does these evil things to me because I'm bad. No, it could be a consequence, if you want to call it that way, for all the modern liberal, you know, politically correct teachers out there. It could be a consequence of something we did to teach us how to be better, but still it could be a punishment because we did something wrong. And this is actually exactly what the Biala Rebbe in Switzerland says in his Dvar Torah that he just put out this year, interestingly enough, on this parsha. My husband, thank you to my husband Yosef for helping me in general with this year, and specifically for showing me this Dvar Torah. I didn't even have time before Shabbos to photocopy it, so I'll read from the sheet with the English that he quotes. But the Biala Rebbe basically gives this approach. He says, Galus Mitzrayim was a punishment. What was it a punishment for? So he quotes the Gemara in Shabbos, which says, let a father never favor one son over another. As a result of 2 coins worth of silk that Yaakov attached to Yosef's coat, his brothers envied him. Eventually, this led to our forefathers' exile in Egypt. So the way he interprets this Gemara, it's saying that what caused us to go down to Mitzrayim? It was Mechiras Yosef. And he also acknowledges, the Biala Rebbe also acknowledges that this was that, you know, that there was a Briskin Abbasaram and Hashem preordained that we should be in Mitzrayim. So what is the Gemara saying? If it was already pre-declared and preordained that we should go down to Mitzrayim, and yet the Gemara says it was because of Mechiras Yosef, the Biala Rebbe says the meaning of this is also reconciling between, in a way, it's the third approach of evil about punishment, but it's similar to the reconciling ideas of before, where it says, true, Hashem declared it, but it changed because of human beings' actions. This time it's not the Mitzrim's actions, this time it's our actions. Because we did Mechiras Yosef, so the Galus Mitzrayim was as long as as harsh as it was. If the brothers had not done Mechiras Yosef, then maybe there would not have been as much suffering as there was. There's a classic explanation of the first psukim in Shmos that say how over time the Galus and Mitzrayim got more and more harsh and the work got harder. So maybe if there would have been no Mechiras Yosef, the Rabbi says, the work in Mitzrayim would have been on a light load like it was in the beginning, and it would never have gotten worse. But we didn't have Achdus, and because of that, we had very hard Galus. And the Vial Rabbi also quotes this Rashi that we said, Achino Da Zavar, and he applies this idea not just to Mitzrayim, but also to our current Galus. He quotes Rav Shmuel from Nicholsburg, who darshens a pasuk in Sefer Dvarim, where it says, if a matter of judgment is hidden from you, between blood and blood, between judgment and judgment, bein dam ladam, bein din ladin, it's somewhat of a famous pasuk, between plague and plague, or words of dispute in your midst, dot, dot, dot. And he darshens it, he says, what's this pasuk talking about? If there are issues of blood, if people are dying or injured, if there's din in the world, if there's plague and illness among Jews, why is it? It's because of words of dispute in your midst. The reason, he says, why Jewish blood is spilled by our enemies and bad things happen in this galus are because of words of dispute in our midst, because we don't have achdus and there are banas and machaber problems. And he says, once again, that we do have the power to reverse these evils, just like Mechiras Yosef was human choice, which led to how hard the galus was, so too human choice nowadays can affect how hard or easy our galus is, and has led to how hard or easy our galus has been. And he quotes, again, later on, he quotes other Gemaras, the Bial Rebbe, which talk about this issue, with Sanhedrin and Sotah, which talk about how respect and Ben Zem Chaver are specific things to this galus and can get us into the Geula from this galus, where it says, how can a person be saved from the hardships that are destined to precede Mashiach? He should engage in Torah study and acts of kindness. Gemil Chasadim is crucial for Geula. And also later in Sotah, he says that the Gemara says, in the time before Mashiach, there will be chutzpah all over the place. The young will be rude to the old, and the elders will have to stand in front of the young people. And again, there's going to be problems, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And so he says, he really emphasizes that Achdus and Bein Adam L'Chaveiro was what got us into Galus Mitzrayim and got us into this Galus, as we know, Sinas Chinam destroyed the second base of Migdash. And that's something specific we could work on to reach the Gula from this Galus, just like I didn't end up copying it for the source sheet, but the sense of Achva and Achdus is also what led Moshe Rabbeinu to become involved with the Jewish people in a way. Sforno says that when Moshe Rabbeinu started to go towards the two Jews who were fighting and the Mitzri going towards the Jew, why did Moshe decide to get involved? Because he just started to awaken in him a spirit of Achva and Achdus with the other Jews. And so that was also a crucial factor in Mitzrayim. So once again, we have three perspectives so far towards evil. Number one, we have the approach that Hashem does evil things, but we don't know why. We just have to believe there's a reason. So approach number two is Hashem takes a step back because we have to have bechira, and so people perpetrate evil. Approach number three is Hashem makes evil happen because bechira exists, but evil things happen because of those things that we chose to do. It's a punishment. Approach number four can be seen in two ways. Approach number four says that, the Maharal, which says, talks about the Kor Barzel, the fiery furnace, seems to say this idea of punishment, but that's not the only way to interpret Kor Barzel. Just for the record, later on, the Yalkut Shimoni, which are brought in source 11 for a different part of this year, towards the end, it explains that the Kor Barzel idea in Zvarim Perek Dalet, that term could be interpreted literally, actually. It doesn't have to mean that Mitzrayim was a punishment. It could also mean that this was something literal that happened in Egypt. It could be a description of the tortures that happened, that the Mitzrayim used to throw the Jewish people into furnaces as sacrifices to their gods, Avodah Zarah sacrifices. So it could be that was not the interpretation of Kor Barzel. So maybe one of the three approaches is why evil things happen. The fourth approach is a little bit distanced from a causal idea. The fourth approach to evil that I'm going to discuss now says that there's something, some redeeming value to evil. Not exactly that it's a punishment per se, but that Hashem had to put us in this situation because we needed to be there to redeem something, to make something better, to grab hold of something good and to improve the world or to do something good with it. And it could be that we can't say that this is why Hashem put us there. Maybe we don't really understand, or maybe that's uncomfortable for people to say. In which case, you could see the fourth approach is just saying, we don't know why we went into the evil things happen or why we went into Mitzrayim, but now that they happened, we should make some good of it, and we should elevate it and put meaning in our lives because of what happened. If you look at source 8, the Sefer HaChinuch explains it in this way. This is mitzvah Taf Lamed Aleph, which is the mitzvah to love a ger, a convert. And he always gives in each mitzvah, the Sefer HaChinuch talks about the dinim of the mitzvah, the halachas of it. He talks about the details of it when it applies. He talks about the sharshah mitzvah, the explanation why these mitzvahs happen, are the case, why we have to keep these mitzvahs. So for the mitzvah to love a convert, he says the explanation why we have this mitzvah is explicit in the pasuk. He says, the pasuk hints to it, ki geirim hayitim be'aretz Mitzrayim. It says, because you were also converts or strangers, literally, in Egypt. He's kir lanu, shekvar nechvinu batzar hagadol hahu, sheyesh l'chol ish haro'eh eratzmo b'toch anashim zeremu eretz nachriya. Because we already know what it's like, what that uncomfortable feeling is like, that distress is like to be in a strange place among strange people. When we think about it and try to remember and hark back to what it was like to be in Egypt, even though we weren't there, but look at our history and our Torah to remember what it was like. But we got out of that state and Hashem saved us from there. Then that should lead us to have mercy on other people who are in a similar situation. So here the Sefer HaChinuch doesn't say this is why we were slaves in Egypt exactly. Maybe you can't say that. But he says an approach to evil is, an approach to Golos Mitzrayim is, he says in the framework of the explanation for the mitzvah, but we could say it's an approach to evil, is that we can use it to help other people. He says, we went through a hard time and felt strange in a strange land. We should make people feel comfortable who are in a strange land. And some people say this about the state of Israel, modern state of Israel. They say the Jewish people went through so much persecution. They were strangers through all their history in the Golos. So now that we have our own state, we should be especially sensitive to minorities and immigrants who come to Israel from other places. We should be especially careful to that. And that's something that we can learn from this experience, and we can grow from it. We can make something positive come out of it, bring meaning out of it. And that's actually, there's another book by Viktor Frankl, who is also a Holocaust survivor. His main thesis, he's in psychology actually, and his main idea about that he brings out of the Holocaust is that a person has to have meaning in life, and meaning through suffering. And one way to find meaning in suffering, as we see here, is to grow from it, or to help other people from it, and that something positive should result from it. It shouldn't just happen. Something positive should come as a result. And source number 9 is also this fourth perspective on evil, but it's more causal, where it does claim that this is the reason why we were in Mitzrayim, in order to bring positive things out of it. It's by the Yismach Yisrael, the Alexander Rebbe, Yerachmil Yisrael Yitzchak of Alexander. Actually, my grandfather, who Al Vashalm, whose Pesach Seder I was mentioning, he was an Alexander, from the Alexander Chassidim. In any case, so the Yismach Yisrael says, Sheyadua Al Pi Svar Makadoshim V'Kitvei Ha'ari Shagol Mitzrayim Haya Rak Levarer HaNitzotzot. He says, of course, it's known why we were in Mitzrayim. It's known, according to the Ari and the Svar Makadoshim, that the reason we were in Mitzrayim was Levarer HaNitzotzot. What does this mean? What are these Nitzotzot? What in the world does that mean? So the Yismach Yisrael is basing his comments, again, he says on the Ari. The Ari has a whole system where he explains how the world was created, and part of his explanation involves that the world now, this current material world of ours, is made of physical material things, and much of the time the physicality is like a shell. It's called the klipot. Chassidus talks about it a lot, and it's nothing intrinsically of value necessarily, but inherent in every klipa there's a part that can be redeemed. And every physical thing in the world, there are nitzotzot scattered all over the place. These sparks, nitzotzot means sparks of godliness, of spiritual potential that are embedded in the physical world that can be redeemed by us if we uplift the physical things towards spiritual things. So for example, a person has a piece of food, has a cup of tea, and it's a very physical thing. It's just some water, it's just some food, you know. But if we say a bracha on it, if we emphasize and point out and highlight the fact that Hashem is the one who created this object, who made the world and made this food, and we're acknowledging that before we eat it, all of a sudden, that physical thing becomes attached to godliness. It becomes related to godliness. It's elevated. And so that's what we're supposed to be doing in this world, Ari says. We're supposed to be elevating the sparks of godliness in this physical world. And so Yitzchak Yisrael quotes the Ari's idea that this is also why we're in Mitzrayim. It's not just things that can be elevated, but places too. And Mitzrayim was a place of impurity, of physicality, but there were sparks of godliness there too. And we had to go down there as the Jewish people in order to uplift those sparks. He doesn't say exactly what those sparks were. Maybe you want to say there was potential, you know, the fact that we were able to merge to become a Jewish nation there. That's where the Jewish people formed and kind of became a unified nation. Or maybe, I don't know, he doesn't exactly explain it. You can kind of think about that. But it tells us the message that when evil things happen, we should try to look at our situation and think about how we can bring good things out of it and what redeeming value things in that situation have. And I saw this as reflected in the Rambam as well. The Rambam in Source 10 is from Hilchos Avel in his Mishneh Torah, and in Perek Gimel Halacha Yabet he talks about a situation, Rachmana Litzlan, where a person dies. And he says, first, kol mish eno mitzabel kamo shitzivu chachamim harei zachzari. Because a person is supposed to mourn to a certain extent, the way the Chachamim, the way the wise sages told us we should. How should we feel? How should we react when such a thing happens, God forbid, v'aleinu? He says, El yifached, v'yad'ag, v'yifashvesh, v'masav, yachzor b'tshuva. A person should worry and should be scared, God forbid, if someone dies. He should search in his deeds and do tshuva. He doesn't say that's why the bad thing happened, but when he's describing action, the Rambam says, this is how a person should respond. He should respond by doing tshuva, even if it didn't happen because he did something wrong, but he could still improve something. And what else? V'chad mibnei chavura shemeit, tid'ag kol ha'chavura kula. If a person, God forbid, from a particular group of friends died, the entire group of friends should really worry. Kol shlosh yamim harishonim, you're at atzmo ki ilu cherev munachat lo al tzevro. The first 3 days after the person died, the person should feel as if there's a sword at his neck. And from the third day after the person died till the seventh day, a person should feel that that sword is sort of cornering him. And after that is a little more distance of time, but he should still feel that that sword is kind of following him around in the marketplace, that there is a threat on him, that it's scary. He says the reason that a person should feel this way is because we're supposed to look at things that happen to people in this world, at bad things that happen to people in this world, as a message to ourselves, not necessarily as causal, but we're supposed to take it to heart and improve from it, and it should make us introspect. You know, after 9/11, a lot of people were more conscious of human beings, of telling their families that they love them, of interpersonal kindness. And we should look at things in that light also. The pasuk, he learns out from this pasuk that when something bad happens, we should really take it to heart and feel that pain in order to grow from it. And in our own community recently, Baruch Hashem, Ba'i Bronstein has been improving a lot, but in situations of where any kind of hardship happens on someone, unfortunately she had, you know, this Baruch Hashem, people in our community give birth all the time, but and are fine, it's a hard process, but they come out fine. But she had this scary experience where she had this terrible infection, and it affected the whole community. And what happens when something bad happens? Again, not just that person, not just that person's family, but the whole Washington Heights. There have been emails all over about saying Tehillim and learning Torah and making challah, different things for her zechus. And Mirz Hashem, she should have a recovery, a full recovery soon. But if anything, we should do more mitzvahs, and it should remind us that Hashem is the one who is ultimately in charge, that childbirth is an ace from Hashem, we should appreciate everything. And in that situation, and in other situations as well, things that are evil, that are hard in this world, can remind us to really improve and make the most of life that we have. And just a perspective, those are the four approaches, basically, right? So we have our four. We have maybe Galus Mitzrayim. Again, I don't want to compare. I have to make a disclaimer, because Gaul's Mitzrayim is not the same thing as other evils that happened in Jewish history. Gaul's Mitzrayim was a unique experience that was, as we saw in Brisbane Avasarim, it was preordained by Hashem, and it was the beginning of the formation of our nation. And so I don't want to sound like I'm saying at all that the Egyptian exile was the same reasoning or the same intensity or anything the same as other evils in Jewish history. God forbid. I can't make that claim at all, and I wouldn't. But there do seem to be some similarities in the approaches towards why we went down to Mitzrayim, and we can learn the similar approaches and apply them to other evils that happened. And so again, those four approaches are, number one, maybe God is the one that decrees that evil should happen. We just don't understand why, but he is the one who's the reason why it happened. Number two, it's not Hashem who makes the evil happen exactly. It's because he steps back and lets people do evil, and that's why evil happens. It's the people's fault. Number three, it's a punishment. Number four, maybe there's redeeming value to the evil. Okay? And what's interesting about these four approaches is that maybe each, you could say they disagree with each other, and maybe one approach resonates with a given person more than another. You can think about which of these approaches feels most comfortable to you. There are Jewish sources, you know, as we see, that give precedence to each approach. So each approach is valid, and one might resonate more with one person than another. And each one is independent. However, sometimes a combination of approaches is also important to see and is helpful. It depends on the circumstance. In one circumstance, just like for one person, a given approach might be more comfortable than another. In a given situation, one approach might be more comfortable than another. Especially like with the Holocaust, many people, while there are great people who have said the Holocaust was a punishment for this and that, many people, especially in our circles, don't feel comfortable saying that. And I don't claim to understand or make a judgment call on those gedolim who do say that it was a punishment, but many people feel more comfortable saying, you know, I don't feel I could say that. How can someone say that? We just don't understand. Or maybe they feel more comfortable saying it was human beings who did that, and we don't understand why Hashem decided not to get involved more. Whatever the case is, different people in different circumstances may beg a different approach. But each approach still has, despite this, each approach still has its advantages and disadvantages, because the first approach is a humble approach. It doesn't claim to understand Hashem, but at the same time, it also could possibly result in a person just accepting what happens without fighting for justice. It's interesting, that's specifically why Rabbi Sachs says we should have the first approach. We should say we don't understand from Hashem, and that's why we should do justice. But if a person just accepts it, and then they might not try to change from it. If they don't see it as a punishment, or they don't see it as something to learn from, they just see it as, oh well, it just happened, they might not grow from it, or they might not try to improve the world. Where the situation of humans doing the evil, that's called the free will defense, by the way, in philosophy world. This whole question of evil is called theodicy, and the free will defense is explanation that God just wanted people to have free will. So that approach is better in a way, because it says that people are responsible. It points out that we are responsible for our actions, and that human action can affect things in an important way, one way or the other. But the scary thing about that approach is that it distances us from Hashem. Maybe that means that we don't involve Hashem in our lives as much. If we look at that perspective, we might come to say, they have free will to do the evil, I have free will to improve things, and then they're going to attribute it to themselves. I'm the one who fixed the situation. They're not going to remember that Hashem is also involved somehow, even if he hides his face somehow. The third approach of punishment many people don't like, because it sounds like it's blaming people, as if it's their fault, and sometimes that doesn't feel very good to say that, and especially if it's a very good person who bad things happen to. But on the other hand, the advantage is it really drives motivation to improve and to do tshuva. The fourth approach might not make us feel like we have to do tshuva, because it's not as direct in saying it's our fault, but it still helps us grow and still helps us learn from things. But maybe we're not going to get as involved to fix the problem. We're just going to introspect and do spiritual things to, you know. And so if you add that to the punishment approach, to the approach of free will, approach number two, then you'll be able to both do the spiritual efforts to improve the tshuva and physical efforts, because human beings have free will. And that's something, you know, like for example, when bad things happen in Israel, many times there are those people who say, oh, say Tehillim, and then those people who are the political activists, rally the government in America, rally the White House. And they're both important. They're both important responses, and that's why all these approaches to evil are important to think about and to remember. And again, each person can kind of grab the one that resonates more with them personally as well. Okay, so we have our four approaches to evil. Given that, what do we do now? How do we get to Geula? Let's not only focus on the bad, focus on the good, right? So there are a lot of reasons why we left Mitzrayim. People could say we had to have the revelations of the Nisim, of the Makos, of the plagues and leaving the Red Sea, or Yismach Yisrael, I quoted in a different spot of that piece. He says, in the merit of Shabbos we left, the Yalkut Shimoni says it's in the merit of the Torah. But the point that I would like to focus on is tefillah, that because of prayer, that's why we were able to leave Egypt. And there's a pasuk that the Yalkut Shimoni quotes in source 11 that says, Vayishma Elokim v'nakatan. Hashem heard our prayers, and the wheels of Geula really started turning only once we cried out to Him and once He listened to us. And what I want to set up now in talking about how we got to Geula and talking about prayer as a very crucial tool to reach redemption is different levels of prayer. That just like we had four approaches to a perspective on evil, we also could have four different levels of prayer. Two of them are described in the Yalkut Shimoni in this Medrash. First it says, Ki Atrafim Dibru Avon, he quotes a pasuk and he says, Mashal Lishnei Na'arim, Echad Med Aviv V'Kivro, V'Echad Aviv Kayam. There are two young men, one's father died, and the other young man, his father was alive. Zeh She'Aviv Kayam, Korei Lo Abba, Umi Adonai Oto. Zeh She'Med Aviv, Holecha Kivro V'Tawek, Avi, Avi, An She'Tashkocho V'Lo Meshivo. So the man whose father was alive, he calls out dad, and his father comes right away and answers him. But the person whose father died, he goes to the grave of the father, and he calls out, Father, Father, until he's all weak and tired, and he doesn't get an answer. Kach Yisrael, because he's not alive. Kach Yisrael, Avim Kayam, Umiyad Hu Ono Otam, Shneamar V'Yishma Elokim V'Nakatam, V'Yad Ter Mikru V'Ani Aneh. So he quotes all these sukkim to back him up, and he says that the Jewish people are the son whose father is alive. We called out to him in Mitzrayim, we cried to him, and right away Hashem answered us. But the non-Jewish nations, they're the children whose father died. They call out to Hashem, something about the way they're davening to him is not right, and Hashem doesn't answer them. And I thought it was interesting also that the Medrash says that they call to him. The non-Jewish nations called Hashem. Not that they're doing Avodah Zarah, but even their calls to Hashem, there's something dead about it. There's something inappropriate about it. Or something that doesn't work quite as well. Obviously, it's possible. They could pray a different way, whatever. I'm not going to get into that topic. But so that's approach of tefillah, level of tefillah number one. It's a simple type of prayer. We're just saying Avi Avi. We're just calling out to Hashem. No explanations or descriptions or elaborate tefillah. We're just saying Hashem, and Hashem answers us right away. It's a simple interaction. The second type of tefillah is the next part of the Yalkut Shimoni. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Spekla Torin, which is a Tsar Tabachin, Shalparo, Hayu Mechan Keno E Yisrael Bekirot Batim Lebinyan, Vayu Tzuakim Mitoch Abinyan, Tzuakim Mitoch Akirot, Bekadosh Baruch Hu Shomea Nakatam. So here the Medrash describes how the Mitzrayim used to kill people and torture them. This horrible, horrible description. He said, the Medrash says, Rabbi Kiva says in the Medrash, that the butlers used to bury the Jews in the walls of the house, or some people may have heard the Medrash that the babies used to be put in the bricks of the house. And the second part says how they burned the Jewish people in their sacrifices, like we mentioned earlier. And what happened from that? The Jews cried out. They screamed from the walls of the house. It doesn't even say they screamed to Hashem. It doesn't say Avi Avi. It just says Tzoakin. They screamed. They cried out. They were in pain from being tortured, from dying. And that's what Hashem heard. And so the second type of tefillah that it has here is a nonverbal tefillah. It's just a cry out of pain. There's not even really interaction with Hashem. We just call out, and that's what Hashem has to hear. And these two, I'm going to actually parallel. This is my own idea, take it or leave it. But when I thought about the different levels of tefillah that I'm presenting to you, to me, they parallel the four sons that we talk about in the Pesach Seder, and it's also possible to view them as a response to the four perspectives on evil. You could look at them in different ways of responses. I'm just going to tell you how I see it. But these first two approaches to me sound like Atam, the simple son's approach of tefillah, and the Sheani Yodei Lishol, the son who doesn't know how to ask, his approach to tefillah. The first one is a simple interactive approach, right? The Tam knows how to ask a question, but simply. This tefillah is just Avi Avi. The second one is a wordless tefillah, it's Sheani Yodei Lishol. And how do these type of tefillahs reply? How are they, in a sense, kind of responses to the perspectives on evil? So, the first approach parallels the first approach. If you say Hashem decrees evil things to happen, we just don't know why. So we reply, Hashem, we don't try to explain our way out of it. We don't try to justify ourselves and say, Hashem, you shouldn't have done it, because we don't know why he did it. It was just a hope. So all we can say to Hashem is, Hashem, save us, in a simple way. Just like we view that perspective on evil as a simple perspective. Hashem just did it. We don't know why. So our response is a simple response. We just stop and simply and ask Hashem to save us. The second type of tefillah, the Sheani Yodei Lishol kind of tefillah, to me, bespeaks a response to the free will defense, because it's not an interactive type of tefillah with Hashem. Just like the evil is not directly interactive between Hashem and us, Hashem stepped back and let the evil happen, so too, we're not going to specifically talk to Hashem. Hashem, you're not going to talk to us, we're not going to talk to you, we're just going to scream out. And then you're going to have to start paying attention. You're going to have to start responding and getting involved and stop hiding your face. And this type of tefillah is just an I'm in pain tefillah. It's not trying to even see Hashem in a way. And this kind of reminded me a little bit of a story about the Klausenberger Rebbe, a Holocaust survivor. This approach of this simple approach that doesn't try to explain evil, and it doesn't try to even say, I'm on a level to daven to Hashem. Maybe when a person sees evil, they're not able to daven to Hashem. They don't feel like comfortable talking to the God who may have perpetrated this evil, but they're in pain. What spirituality, what Jewish perspective can we have on that? So the story goes that some people told the Klausenberger Rebbe about a particular young man who was also a Holocaust survivor. And he was when he was in Europe, he was from, and he was religious. He was a big masman. He learned a lot of Torah, big Talmud Chacham. And so the Klausenberger Rebbe says, bring this boy to me. So the boy comes. The boy is completely, he doesn't keep the mitzvahs anymore. He doesn't believe in God anymore or anything. How could he? He went through all these horrors. And so the Klausenberger Rebbe brings him in. He starts talking to him. He says, you're the son of Reb Leibish, I hear. The boy says, yes. He says, oh, I knew him in Europe. And he says, I hear you were a big Talmud Chacham. I hear you were a really great Masmid in Europe. The boy says, yes. And the boy is already starting to get on the defense, because he knows the Rebbe. He knows the Rebbe values Torah. But he's not going to go along with it. Maybe the Rebbe is going to try to convince him to keep the mitzvahs or anything. He's not going to do that. He's upset, and doesn't believe in God. He can't believe in God after everything that happened. He puts up his defenses. The Rebbe notices. He looks at him. He notices this change in the boy, and he says to him softly, he says, you're angry. Of course I'm angry, the boy screams, and he gets all upset, he gets all worked up. Of course I'm angry. The best people were taken from us. People were killed. Horrible things happened. Klausenberger Rebbe looks back at him, looks in his eyes, and says, you're right. The best were taken from us. I had a wife and 11 children, 11 wonderful children, who were all killed in the Holocaust. You're right. Horrible things happened. The best were taken from us. And with that, the Rebbe breaks down into tears. He falls on the boy's arms, his shoulders, and the boy and the Rebbe just cry and cry and cry on each other's shoulders. The Rebbe doesn't try to explain anything. He doesn't talk about God or belief or mitzvahs or anything. They just cry. The boy stayed there for an hour. After an hour, he went home, said Shema before going to bed for the first time in a long, long time. And the point is, sometimes you don't have to interact with Hashem. Sometimes the comfort can come from just crying out. And that's what we see here in this type of tefillah. Just crying out in pain is a cathartic thing, and that too could be a form of tefillah in a way. And Hashem hears that as well. The third type of tefillah, another source about the second type of tefillah, source 12, the Yismach Yisrael again, he also talks about this wordless cry. He says, of Mitzrayim, kasher haya b'mem tet sharei tuma, v'hayu ka'almim, He says, we were on the 49th level of impurity in Egypt. We were on the 49th level of Tumah. We were like mute people, like in the Pasuk in Tehillim, like mute people who couldn't speak. And we couldn't even stop or call out to Hashem. We just sighed and we just cried out in pain. Oy vavoy. So again, maybe it's because of this low level that we were on Mitzrayim that we couldn't verbalize it. When things are especially hard, it's especially hard to verbalize a tefillah. That doesn't mean we can't daven at all. It doesn't mean we can't express our feelings in a way that, in a Jewish way, calling out with words or without words, the tam or the she'ena yodeh lishol, are both tefillah. The third way, level of tefillah, I would call the Rasha's way of tefillah. You think the Rasha doesn't daven? No, the Rasha davens. What's the Rasha's way of tefillah? If you look back at source number 7, where we had that Rashi, we see what Moshe Rabbeinu was wondering about can be viewed as a type of tefillah. Maybe he was asking it to Hashem. He said, "Machatu Yisrael, mikol shivim umot liot neradim b'avodat parach." What did the Jewish people do wrong that they had to suffer and be in Egypt? And in a way, this is almost arguing with Hashem. Granted, he ultimately justified it, and he said, "Oh, I see. Now it was their fault." But he was arguing about it. And we see this type of tefillah also with other people, with Avram Avinu and Sodom. When Hashem said, "I'm going to destroy Sodom," Avram said, "Wait a minute, but what if there are tzaddikim in the city? What if there are 50? What if there are 45? What if there are 40? And he was arguing with Hashem. In a way, arguing is also kind of tefillah. You might call it like a Russia kind of tefillah in a way, but it's a type of tefillah. Even the greatest Moshe Rabbeinu and Avram Avinu did it. And to me, this also in a way responds to the punishment. Maybe the punishment is an answer that Hashem might have, the punishment approach to evil. As we see in the Rashi, that's a response that Hashem might have to us. We say, "Why did you do evil?" Hashem says, "You deserved it." But in a way, it could go the other way around also. Maybe Hashem says, "You deserved it." And maybe that's a harsh kind of approach to evil. And to me, this paralleled that harshness. It's a harsh kind of tefillah. My grandfather also, Olav Shalom, he used to argue with Hashem about the Holocaust. And I'm not saying that every person should go out and start arguing with God. Tefillah is a very personal thing. But in the proper way, you know, in the some kind of covetic way, there is an idea. The Jewish people are called Bnei Yisrael. The word Yisrael comes from the root that we fought with Hashem. There is an aspect to tefillah, to Judaism, that involves fighting with Hashem. When evil things happen, or any time, we could daven simply, "Hashem save us." We could cry out in pain without words. We could cry out in arguing, in a Russia kind of way, as you might call it. And the fourth approach to tefillah is a little bit distant. The fourth approach to tefillah, I would say, is the Chacham's kind of tefillah. It's the fourth kind of approach to evil's kind of tefillah, because the fourth approach to evil is uplift things. It's not even directly related to why the evil happened. It's just a response, or it's just a perspective of how to make life meaningful. And this type of tefillah we'll see in Emek Davar, source 13. In Shmos, also on the Parsha, when Moshe Rabbeinu was at the burning bush, he went out, it says that he went out to the desert, and that's where he saw the burning bush. Why did he go out to the desert area? He was shepherding his sheep. There's not so much for the sheep to graze on in the desert area where it's desolate. But it says, "B'midbar mibai, ela ha-mashmo'ot sha'ayah mishtadil anhig b'makom sh'yoter midbar, v'nimshaf achar makom midbar, v'hu kadei sh'yuchal hitbodet v'lachkor achar elokut v'kadomeh." Why did he purposely go out to this deserted, desolate area? Because he wanted l'hitbodet v'lachkor achar elokut. He wanted to go out by himself and commune with Hashem, to talk to Hashem. And this idea of hitbodet, which many people associate with chassidus, it's a big thing in Breslov, to go out to the forest and talk to Hashem. But we see the Avos did it. A different medrash talks about how the forefathers were shepherds, for specifically because of this reason. They liked to be alone with Hashem, to talk to Hashem. And this says about Moshe Rabbeinu also. And this type of tefillah, it's kind of a little bit distanced from the evils. It's not a response to something. It's a higher level. It's a little bit more complex. It involves just talking to Hashem. It involves making life more meaningful, not only when bad things happen, but making life more meaningful, just like the fourth approach to evil is about making life more meaningful. It's the Chacham's approach to preempt the evil. Sometimes, and maybe this is one way we could kind of ask Hashem to stop evil by saying, "I'm going to preempt it. I'm going to go out and daven to you and try to connect you in my own way," not as a response to something. Moshe Rabbeinu here, Emek Davar doesn't say that Moshe was saying anything about the Galus. He was just going out to daven. Maybe, just maybe, if we try to improve ourselves, do the tshuva, and fix the world, accomplish things, tikkun olam, accomplish things in the world at large, in the political arena, in the spiritual arena, before things go wrong, before Hashem has to send evil things, or before people are allowed to do evil things, maybe that could nip it in the bud, and that could bring good about good things. And so the Chacham's approach to tefillah is preemptive, it's contemplative, and that's the fourth way. So once again, we have four types of tefillah, which kind of counteract the four types of four explanations to evil things and the four sons. And as we see, if you look again at the end of the Ramban in source 4, he explains that why were the Jewish people ultimately redeemed? Last line, because we davened, that's why Hashem received our tefillos, and that's why Hashem redeemed us. And so whatever things are happening, whether it was in the time of the Mitzrayim, again, it's not the same thing, but nowadays, things that happen that are problems in people's lives, a foundational Jewish approach to bad things happening is, granted, we could try to say, why does it happen? Maybe Hashem made it happen, maybe we don't understand Him, maybe people did it and we have to take responsibility on ourselves to make the right choices. Maybe it was punishment. Maybe we can find some redeeming aspect of it. But ultimately, we have to daven. We have to daven to Hashem. And again, just as the approach is to evil, one might resonate more to a person than another. So too, different types of tefillah exist, and one type might resonate more to one person than another. Maybe you're more of a chacham, rosh, hatam, she'en, a delishal kind of praying person. Maybe a given circumstance begs a certain type of prayer. Maybe all someone can bring themselves to do in a situation is to just cry out in pain, is to sigh. They call it a krechts. Maybe all someone can do is to argue with Hashem. Maybe a person wants to preempt and just pour out their heart in a hisbodes kind of way. Maybe they can just call out simply. Whatever it is, we should all have the strength to pray, to daven to Hashem, and to have a proper perspective when bad things happen. And Mir Hashem, this should bring the geula from our Golis as well, and Hashem should hear our prayers.